You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up at 7, it's Reveal. Tonight, if you can't afford a lawyer, one will be appointed to you. But in New Orleans, the lawyer in charge of representing poor people accused of crimes is saying no. His office doesn't have enough money or time to do a good job, he says, so he's refusing some serious cases. It's jamming up the courts, leaving a lot of people stuck in jail with no lawyer. His goal, to break the system in order to fix it. Tonight after 7 on Reveal.
First, in addition to choosing leaders at all levels of government, elections have the power to get a lot of people politically engaged, including immigrants. Historically, immigrants register to vote in relatively low numbers, but our next guest says that nonprofit groups can provide a rallying point for immigrant political action on Election Day and beyond.
Heath Brown is an assistant professor of public policy at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice and the Graduate Center, City University of New York. He joins us to talk about his recent book, Immigrants and Electoral Politics, Nonprofit Organizations in Times of Demographic Change. Heath, welcome to Central Time.
Real pleasure.
And Christine Newman-Ortiz also joins us to talk about her nonprofit work with immigrants in Wisconsin. She's the founding executive director of Voces de la Frontera, a low-wage and immigrant worker center with chapters in Milwaukee and Racine. Christine, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, Heath, let's start us off. Talk about immigrant involvement in state and national politics. As you write, there's a lot of immigrants in the country, a lot of groups that work with them, but a wide range. Some groups don't touch electoral politics, election day politics at all. Some very involved in it. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. You know, we often refer to immigrants quite generically, using that kind of legal terminology, but immigrants really look very different in different parts of the country. And so there are parts of the country with largely undocumented communities, other parts of the country with second and third generation immigrants. The time in country really does differ and affects the political involvement of different groups. One of the other things we know is that, unfortunately, immigrants don't vote when they are permitted to in very large numbers. And trying to understand why that might be and the connection to mobilization was one of the goals that I had in writing the book.
Is one obstacle that if you are running a group that deals with immigrants, say, from a particular country, your constituency might include people who are naturalized, they're citizens, they can vote, and people who don't have that status. So you are covering a lot of different ground in the services you provide. Electoral politics might be one small sliver of that.
Absolutely. Most of the groups that I'm focused on and most of the groups that serve immigrants don't have politics as their number one priority. As you suggest, they provide all sorts of necessary services related to health and education and language and jobs. Getting to politics is often very low on the list of priorities. I think it's very understandable when organizations view politics that way, but there are consequences. And what I tried to do is understand when an organization says to itself, you know, politics is something that we're going to add to our array of things that we do, and also understand those other organizations that say it's just not something we can afford to do or are willing to do, and try to get to understanding that, because I think it matters so much to understanding the position of immigrants in many communities.
And Christine, let's bring you in on this now with Voces de la Frontera. How big a part of your focus is politics and voting?
We became involved in mobilizing the vote and defending the right to vote back in 2004 when, as part of a national immigrant rights strategy, we didn't want to just focus on, you know, doing broader education, engaging people in our campaigns, but also having an impact on elections and, in particularly, mobilizing the Latino and immigrant vote on behalf of those who were disenfranchised from the voting process. And in 2008, we actually formed an arm of Voces de la Frontera called Voces de la Frontera Action in Milwaukee, where the largest concentration of Latino voters are in the state, that explicitly allowed us to endorse candidates based on their platform and on their record, but not being affiliated with any political party or candidate. And that was at the request of the community. So since 2008, we've been organizing through Voces La Frontera Action here for the elections, for all levels of elections, from school to presidential. And we've been doing it, especially through our youth arm, Youth Empowered in the Struggle. We've been organizing just general get out the vote, especially in the schools and in Racine.
As we mentioned, overall voting numbers for immigrants lower than for many other parts of the population. But as Heath said, really varies depending on which group of immigrants you're talking about, where they are, how many generations. How do you see voter turnout among immigrant groups here in Wisconsin and the communities you work with?
Well, for this election, we focused very hard on the 47 wards in Milwaukee that had the high concentrations of Latino voters, and there's and then a little bit in Green Bay as well. And what we did see is that in the wards with the highest concentration of Latino voters, you had like 89% supporting Clinton and a little bit less than that supporting the U.S. Senate candidate Feingold, which, of course, was a very important race as well. And then in the broader one where they didn't represent a majority, but there still was a sizable population. So in all 47, you have a kind of total vote there of around 81%. So, but we did see a decline in those wards compared to 4 years ago of like 9% in the city as a whole, which is, you know, Milwaukee majority minority city. We did see there was a bigger drop off than in the Latino wards of 15%. So the story in Wisconsin as part of the national story of the elections, if we just, you know, look at where the highest concentration is that in general, statewide, we didn't have so many voters turning out for the Trump ticket. It was basically equivalent numbers to Romney, who also ran back in 2012 on a self-deportation platform. But what we did see is a drop-off of close to, quarter million votes declined to around 200,000 votes difference than 4 years ago on the the Democratic ticket. So I think what we noticed in our conversations with Latino voters was that I personally was very surprised when I went canvassing that about 15% of the Latinos that we talked to were undecided about who to vote for in the upcoming elections. And I found that number high from my point of view, given, you know, the platform of hate and threats that have been made for so long throughout the campaign. And when we quickly had a conversation with people about that to say, and a lot of the starting point was, well, they're both the same. And when you talk to people and say, well, let's think about that in terms of what the platform actually is standing for, then people would quickly say, okay, no, that makes sense. Yeah, I'll vote for Clinton. But I think as the other caller mentioned, that the resources, for me, it was a question of resources because I think you needed to start sooner talking to Latino voters. Because they were quickly convinced about what was the better platform in the interests of their community.
We're talking about immigration and politics, immigrant communities and political participation. Christy Newman-Ortiz with Voces de la Frontera and Heath Brown, author of Immigrants and Electoral Politics. And Heath, your subtitle talks about nonprofit organizations and demographic change. Talk about this moment, a lot of talk, obviously, about immigration politics in this election in particular.
Yeah, so and so many of the things that Christine just talked about, I think were picked up in the research that I did. One of the reasons for the subtitle is because we're during this period of a pretty rapid demographic change. And one of the things that makes it different from previous periods where we've had a large amount of immigration is we have also these new communities across the country that didn't in the past have very many immigrants residing in their boundaries. So places across the South, for example, North Carolina and Georgia and Tennessee, are places that in the past had very, very few immigrants. And now the immigrant numbers are growing. Another thing that we know is that immigration is growing from new places. And so the Asian American community, which is also has large percentage foreign-born, is growing at the fastest rate among any different community in the country. And so the way that the demographics of the country are changing are much more complicated and in many ways more interesting than we're sometimes led to believe. It's that complexity that makes mobilizing immigrants in one community very different than another community because of issues of language and education and so forth. And so that puzzle that Christine mentioned when she went out canvassing, which is people still undecided about who they were going to vote for, despite what seemed like pretty stark differences between the candidates, is something that shows up in effective strategies that some nonprofit organizations use. It sounds like Christine is using many of those to try to target the things that immigrants care most about. And so that's some of the way that demographics are playing out.
And Heath, is there sometimes a debate within groups thinking, we should get involved in election politics to protect our interests, the thinking within the group there, versus B, these are tough times, a lot of anti-immigrant feeling. We should keep our heads down and not be front and center in election politics. Is that something these nonprofits you study are weighing?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Resources, of course, matter, and this can be expensive. But if you hold resources constant, what you find is organizations mentioning those kinds of things. A lot of people have arrived in this country from quite repressive regimes in their home country. And as a result, when they arrive in the United States during a time period where immigrants have really been under assault, rhetorically and in other ways, for some organizations and some communities, they're simply not willing to engage in politics out of the fear of the potential retribution that might come on the community. The stakes are high. I think we've all heard about the kinds of hate crimes that have been happening just since the election. It's not that long ago, just 4 years ago in Wisconsin during the 2012 election, that terrible, terrible massacre occurred in Oak Creek. Some of the same politics that were playing out in 2012 were repeated in 2016, pushing some groups further outside of political engagement. There are big consequences to that, despite it being quite understandable to want to remain outside.
Talking to Heath Brown from John Jay College and Voces de la Frontera Executive Director Christine Newman-Ortiz, looking at the role nonprofits play in getting immigrants in the political process, especially in times of major demographic change, as Heath was saying, times like right now.
And we want to hear from you. Do you think that immigrants should be more involved in election politics? What barriers do you see? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. If you worked with a campaign or a nonprofit, tell us if you invested time in registering immigrants to vote. If you have an immigrant background, we'd love to know what you think. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll rejoin the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation with Heath Brown, author of Immigrants and Electoral Politics, and Christine Newman-Ortiz, Executive Director of Voces de la Frontera, looking at political action, immigrant groups, and nonprofit groups that represent their interests.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guests? If you or your parents are immigrants, did they get involved in politics or did they stay away? Have you participated in one of the nonprofit groups our guests are talking about? Tell us what you think of the role of immigrants in politics, especially after the most recent election. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234.
And we'll go straight to our callers now. Andreas joins us from Madison. Andreas, hi.
Oh, hi. How are you doing? Thank you for taking the call.
What do you think?
Well, I was listening to your guest, and I respectfully disagree with him when he says that I don't know if you say certain immigrants don't care about voting or maybe don't pay attention too much to that. I came to this country 20 years ago. I started voting in 2004. I was living in Chicago. I have a lot of friends from different countries, you name it, South America, Europe. I am not only waiting for the election to go and vote, but I call people and make sure they vote, all my immigrant friends, and we take it very seriously. And I don't only vote for the big election, but I vote for DAs, for any small elections. I understand that the process is, my voice is a vote. So we take it very seriously. And most immigrants, they know, take it very seriously.
Andreas, thank you so much for that call. Heath, I imagine you see that variation. Some immigrants take their citizenship as a duty, as it sounds like Andreas does, and get involved in politics. But overall, it sounds like the numbers, immigrants don't tend to vote quite as much.
Yeah, and I couldn't disagree at all with what Andreas had to say. There are many, many immigrants who care a lot about politics. That is indisputable. One of the issues we have is that across the board, we don't have nearly close to 90 or 95% voter turnout. We don't have that across any group. Those that are foreign-born tend numerically to vote in somewhat smaller numbers. One of the reasons for that is because we don't make it terribly easy to vote, so that if you are newly a newly naturalized U.S. citizen, that doesn't immediately come with being registered to vote. So we require people to go out and register. And then we require people to get fully informed and educated about elections as we go and have so many different elections. Elections don't all occur on just one single day. So there's a number of reasons why even somebody who cares a lot about elections and cares a lot about politics might not ultimately show up on election day. It may not be an indication of them not being interested, but maybe an indication of all sorts of other factors that might go into them opting not to vote, including the small window of time many people have to vote in many states. It's not something that we give an unlimited amount of time to go out and cast your vote. We tend to restrict that in some ways. So even the most conscientious person, including immigrants, still might not turn out and vote because of some of the hurdles that we put in their way to turning out.
Before we bring Christine on this, I want to bring in our caller who speaks to this point a little bit. May in Madison. May, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, May?
So I do a lot of outreach in the Asian community here in Dane County, and I also volunteer at the polls, and I completely agree that immigrants do need to participate more in politics as well as volunteering their time at the polls. However, due to a lot of barriers, training, resources, as well as education, there's a lot of money that's put into that, so that does affect the turnout. I see the challenges at the voting.
Your line's breaking up a little, May, but we take your point. So, Christina, can you talk about the challenges to voting that Heath and May are talking about, the challenge to voting and to participating maybe even as a poll volunteer?
I think for me, the answer is around year-round engagement. And, you know, you see a lot of money come into elections, and maybe that's just something that is a factor. But there has to be an understanding that there really has to be year-round engagement of people to really then scale up and engage, and so the people have the information so that people can go to the polls, so people can become poll workers, all of that. So I think that is absolutely critical, because the challenges that a lot of Latino voters have, in our experience, has been, that, for instance, we created the C4 Armed Voces a la Frontera Action because people are very busy, and for folks who English is not their first language, you have a language barrier. People are, in many cases, vast majority low-wage working-class families, maybe holding two or three jobs, have children, so very limited time, and so really do need a lot of information. I think the more accessible it is, the better. We saw voter ID implemented on large scale for the first time. I mean, the vote difference in Wisconsin was only 22,177 votes. And so we know those creating additional bureaucracy, you know, will impact the voting. And I think where we make it easier and more accessible, you see people participate for the first time, because one of the lawsuits that was in place, we had early voting that was available, as far as I know, since 2004 at least, that was available, like one in the north side where you have African-American community, one in the south side where you have the Latino community, extended hours, weekend. And that was because of a lawsuit that didn't challenge, couldn't ultimately challenge the use of the photo ID, but did challenge the other restrictions, such as early voting. And we saw in our neighborhoods a 300% increase in early voting. And that's the difference also about making voting more accessible, which is, per our state, a constitutional right.
And Heath, briefly, as we wrap up, how do you see this playing out to the next maybe 4 years under a Donald Trump presidency in just 40 seconds or so?
Yeah, I think Christine is exactly right. If a community wants to be involved and shape the direction of policy, they have to be involved during elections and not during elections. They have to be involved all the year round. And if they are, what you'll get is that momentum moving towards Election Day. A community that continues to be involved right now will be involved 2 years from now and 4 years from now. If you turn off that involvement and just expect it to pick up again in 2 years or 4 years from now, it simply won't. So active, constant involvement, I think, is really the best recipe for a fully engaged population.
We'll leave it there for now. Thanks to both of our guests, Heath Brown, Assistant Professor of Public Policy at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, author of the book Immigrants and Electoral Politics. Christine Newman-Ortiz, also with us, founding executive director of Voces de la Frontera.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.